Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, I'm Janet. Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast.
Janet, what is a podcast?
It's like the radio, but there's no music, and literally anyone can do one at any moment about any subject. And there's a billion of them.
Sounds great. Hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. I play Sean. Today we're talking about Season 1, Episode 12, Mindy St. Clair, directed by Dean Holland, written by Megan Amram and Jen Statsky, and including guest cast Adam Scott, Tia Sirkar, Leslie Grossman, Alan Rachel, Jaylene Arias, Tom Beyer, John Hartman, Avery Hayes, Mele Ihara, Georgia Mishak, and Seth Morris. Eleanor, Janet, and Jason escape to the Medium Place, where they meet a naked woman gardening named Mindy St. Clair. Mindy explains how she led a controversially selfish and cocaine-fueled life, but then pulled off a last-minute giant act of goodness, resulting in a huge fight between the good and bad places. Her living situation is a result of a compromise between the realms. Mindy advises Eleanor to just look after herself. Jason and Janet attempt sex. Back in the good place, Michael presents Eleanor's case to Sean. He reveals that Jason was also a mistake. Eleanor's friends argue on her behalf, but the judge watches moments from Eleanor's life and the damning evidence is overwhelming. Sean uses walkie-talkie mode on Janet to tell Eleanor to return in 4 hours or he will take her friends to Honey and Chidi instead. Eleanor convinces Jason that they have to go back and they rush to the good place but are too late. Sean says they have to decide which two will go to the bad place. In a series of birthday flashbacks, including her own death, Eleanor remembers how she used to avoid relying on anyone and maintained her independence. My guests today are visual effects supervisor David Niednagel and Mary Beth Monroe, who plays Mindy St. Clair. David and Mary Beth, welcome. Everything is fine.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Happy to be here.
Full disclosure, Mary Beth Monroe and I are married. to other people.
Basically.
Let me finish. Full disclosure, we know each other forever.
Long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
How do I know you?
We came up together in the Detroit comedy scene, Jackson, at the Second City Detroit. Back in 99 is when I joined.
97 for me.
97. And we were there. We did probably like 4 shows together, 3 shows.
I think it may have been just a couple before I left. But yeah, I was there from, pardon me, from 1997 through 2000 and then moved here in 2001.
Yes.
The reason I ask is that you are in everything. You're in lots of TV shows and lots of movies.
Are you, Mark Evan Jackson?
No, I know. but I'm curious, like, for the listeners, what is the path for someone like you? Like, you started in theater in school.
Yes, I started with musical theater was really my main focus. And I thought, honestly, for a little while, I was going to go to New York and pursue that. And then I found out what a Broadway career is like for somebody.
Which
and
is?
It's very difficult. And it's just a tougher lifestyle than I think I was hoping for. So, but then improv really paved the way for me, as it did for you.
Sure.
You know, Second City just kind of got me into this club that created a lot of relationships that helped me move to Chicago after Detroit. And I did the Chicago Second City scene for a while. And then, again, that club, knowing people that helped me as soon as I came to Los Angeles, you know, like the Jim Belushi actually helped me out when I first came and gave me my first job in television, understudying for Courtney Thorne Smith on his show, according to Jim.
Doing like stand-in work.
Yeah,
stuff,
it was
right?
Totally stand-in work. And it was like so much better than having to wait tables or anything because I got this crash course in television. And
So what does that mean? You are there while they light the scene, right?
No. So she was pregnant at the time. Mm. And I actually got to rehearse all of her scenes with the principal actors.
Holy cow.
So they wanted someone who had improv. Jim specifically wanted someone with an improv background to kind of come in and be able to riff and stuff because they were a very open, fun set like that. So I actually got to rehearse the scenes as if I was Courtney Thorne Smith and then give her her blocking in her dressing room, which was pretty rad for someone who just came to LA and had no idea what she was doing. So.
Yeah, no, that makes me angry. David, you have an interesting career. You have a giant role in this show. I guess by way of introduction, what's the difference between VFX, visual effects, CGI, special effects? I feel like the general public uses these terms interchangeably, and I don't think they work necessarily.
Yes, there's definitely a difference. Special effects is what's practical, what you see like on set. So anything that's like an explosion, if there's like wires or car flipping or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then visual effects is anything that's done through the computer. So that's what I do.
And what is CGI?
CGI does that stands for computer-generated images. And so there's kind of two schools of people. That some say CGI, some say CG.
Okay.
Because we're, you know, too cool for school and we drop the I. So I'm a CG.
You don't have that kind of time.
You're a CG
Yeah,
guy.
That's right. Okay. I mean, I drop the I got so much more stuff I can do.
Right.
So,
but that's in your wheelhouse as well?
Yeah, CG. So it's just the computer-generated stuff. And, you can break things down from there, from like 3D things where if it's like a dinosaur or something like that, you model and you animate and do it that way. Or there's 2D stuff where it's like if we're doing like a split screen or it's just kind of 2D images that you're putting together and compositing together. So,
and what is your background? What is your education in this stuff?
I was an economics major with a minor in Scandinavian studies.
Sure. Oh, my God.
So
it's a tale really, as old as time.
It is. It's just kind of the logical progression from that into visual effects. So
what are you talking about?
I came from a very business-minded family.
Sure.
And it was I was always the creative one. I went to UCLA and I had a comic strip in the school paper.
Amazing.
And I kind of always knew I wanted to do something creative, but I kind of had no idea what that was because nobody in my family – had any like artistic bone in their body. So I'm like,
they're not listening, I hope.
I'm not sure if they can try on a computer, but that's another story. But anyway, so I'm like, you know what? I'll get a degree and then I'll, you know, have something to fall back on. And I'll try to do, I have no idea what I'm going to do with art. And it just so happened, one of the guys I went to school with, he was independently wealthy, wanted to start up a computer animation company. He's like, hey, you're creative. Want to come work for me? I'm like, sure, I don't have a job.
Wow.
I don't want to do this economic stuff.
Is he hiring now?
I don't know. This was quite a while ago. So I just worked for him for a little bit and just kind of led into another thing, and, you know, been doing it for almost 20 years now.
But are you self-taught in that regard?
Yeah. We sat in a room and we just kind of, we made up projects for ourselves. And kind of back when I was doing it or starting, there wasn't really school for it.
Yeah.
And so there's no way of, back then, how to do it. And it's one of those things that you can teach yourself, and like there's a lot of information out there. Cause I'll get the question a lot now. People are like, should I go to school for this or should I not? And it's kind of, you don't necessarily need to go to school for it. You know, and I have a lot of friends that have been doing this for years that, again, they're high school diplomas. And it's kind of one of those things that if you can do it, you can do it. And a school degree doesn't always pay into that. So
I think we would say the same thing.
It's the paying of dues, right?
Yes.
It's 10,000 hours. It's exactly. Just doing it.
Exactly.
And then when you're in school, you got teachers that, you know, hopefully know some of them. It's having people around you that you can kind of say, hey, how do I do this? And how do I do that? I mean, even I still do that. I'll go to like YouTube and I'll sort of like, how do I do this? And it'll be like a 13-year-old kid doing like a little tutorial. And I'm like, all right, your stuff doesn't look that great, but you told me the right buttons to push. And so I now I know how to go do, because there's a lot of different disciplines within visual effects.
Certainly there are collegiate programs in it now, though, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm not knocking those, saying there.
But it seems like you are. I think
well, just like, I think a lot of people can come away with a lot of debt. I think that's just school in general now.
Sure.
It's just you pay a lot, and then you're starting 1 foot in the hole. And
Can I ask you a question?
You sure may.
What did you think you were going to go into with economics? Like, what were you going to do if, like, this didn't work out for you?
My first job out of college, I designed coupons.
Oh.
And I wanted to die. It was rough.
I mean, that's graphic design more than
anything.
Yeah, right?
And so it was just kind of like, I'm not sure if it was like,
oh my God.
Like,
I thought for a second you were like, I designed the math behind the coupons.
No,
like,
no,
if I offer
no.
20% off these apples,
what
will that do for the Albertsons or whatever?
Right. That's as close as I got to art. I'm like, I got to figure something else out here.
Yeah.
And so,
oh, wow.
And just, I was just fortunate that the opportunity came up because I don't know what I would have done otherwise.
What a great spur, though, to get you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You were in the bad place and extricated yourself.
Oh, like anything was better than designing coupons.
Now, being a Scandinavian language
studies
major,
minor,
studies.
Yes.
Sorry,
that's I did work on Thor, so that actually helped out a lot. People were very impressed. Like I could pronounce Mjolnir and stuff like that. Oh yeah, it's Thor's hammer. You know, so
wow.
And that's about
that was the extent
that was your minor.
Yeah.
Now the stuff that we're talking about that you do for The Good Place are anywhere from flying shrimp to my cocoon to kicking a dog into the sun. Reaching down Janet's throat, all of that kind of thing.
Yes.
Now, your job on any other show is probably what? Putting television shows into screens that are marked? Or?
Well, actually, The Good Place is my first TV show.
Oh,
that
wow.
I've done. So I've mainly just doing features before this. And so, actually, I met Morgan Sackett on Popstar, which is from the Lonely Island guys. So I've known those guys for a while. I worked on a movie with Akiva Schaffer back in like 2011, 2012. And kind of did music videos with them and just kind of little side projects here and there. And so I did Popstar, met Morgan from that. And then towards the end of that, it's like, hey, do you want to, you know, we got this TV show coming up. Were you interested in doing it? And he's like, Drew Goddard's directing the pilot. And I guess Akiva and Drew are really good friends. And so that kind of put me in the good place.
Or good. Right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
No,
that was perfect.
So that's how I kind of came into it. And so TV is definitely a lot different visual effects wise than movies, for sure. I mean, there's just budget and time is just a radical difference.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty rude awakening for me coming into that. So, yeah, the pilot was.
You're saying the money is much larger, and you've got all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing. it's makes it a lot easier.
One effect that was practical in this episode, I assume, was your being super naked behind sunflowers when we meet Mindy St. Clair.
I don't really know the effects behind that outside of my workout schedule.
there was this, a little, I think we might have moved a couple flowers here.
Is that right?
It was really, a lot, I think it was pretty practical. I mean, I had a bandeau on that was like flesh colored and like underpants, and that was a fun day on set.
was that your
in
first?
Sunflowers. Yeah, I mean, I gave birth in a kiddie pool in a movie called The Backup Plan, like in 2000. I think 10 it came out. So they built, which was really cool, but they built the first like waterproof pregnancy like belly that was ever used, like because I had to be submerged in water. Anyway, but that was pretty revealing.
So you're Hollywood royalty.
Basically, is what I'm saying. When it comes, when I'm naked, I'm Hollywood royalty. But yeah, I think that was pretty practical. I don't know if that anything post had to happen.
Yeah,
I just had to be very careful and not be very humble or modest.
Sure.
Like, just put it out there. But
and you shot that where? Like, was that Blue Sky Ranch?
It was Thousand Oaks, right?
Like a Thousand Oaks area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty used farmhouse for, like, different projects and stuff. I think even Kristen Bell was saying, I can't remember what movie she shot there, but she and Dak shot a movie and did, like, a big car chasing scene there. So I think it's pretty used, but but not air-conditioned and a lot of flies in that place. Oh, my God. It was hilarious. We were doing our scene, Kristen Bell and I, at the bar where we're drinking beer, and I'm telling kind of like Mindy's backstory, and it was like Amityville Horror. I'm not kidding. Like, just flies were everywhere. At one point, one landed on my eye mid-sentence. Kristen could not recover because she was like, that was the most hilarious thing I've ever seen. Landing in our beers, like, it was just, was really gross.
So this is an interesting evidence of a time when the interior and the exterior are the same house, because that's often not.
Yeah, for sure. And we actually had to the location itself, like we filmed it, and the original plan for us was to, there's a train goes there, and we were supposed to extend the train tracks and add the caboose to the train. But so they shot it, and it just wasn't medium enough for Mike, because it's like, it's very hilly and there's trees and stuff. So there's a big crane shot as they get off.
Right.
And Mike's like, we were normally like, he'll edit it, we'll come in, and it will kind of a turnover event. And he'll go like, hey, on this shot, do this. And we got to that shot. I was like, hey, can you make it flat out in the background? And I'm like, okay, well, that's not really in our budget and our time frame, but we'll see what we can do. And so it's this big, you know, 10, 20 second shot of them getting off the train.
Right.
That all in the background, we had to make it super flat. And I think to me, it really like changed the whole tone of what the medium place is.
Sure.
And it feels very desolate, and but not terrible.
Not it is desert, like, but lonely.
It, but lonely, yeah. Not pretty, but not horribly ugly. It is just right in that
But
pocket.
You didn't have a football field green screen to throw
up. No, and that's what's kind of hard with a TV time schedule, because we normally get like 2 to 3 weeks for an episode, and then we're getting a new episode every week. So we have 3 episodes that we're working on at a time that we're delivering every week, and we're getting a new one behind it. So trying to get that done in that time frame where we had like one guy working on that shot probably for the duration of the entire time we were working on that episode, just to make it
a four-second walk shot of Janet complaining about walking.
That's why my request for making my ass look better in that episode was blatantly
ignored.
It was on
the list, but
I got you. I got you. That's all right. I forgive you.
I remember, Mary Beth, when you were shooting this episode, I had texted you to see if you were available to, I don't know, come improvise or do something. And you said, I can't. I'm working next week.
Yeah.
And I said, Mindy St. Clair. And you were like, how did you know that?
I was so scared.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think anybody's supposed to know. Like,
and I remember texting, I'm Sean. And you were like, oh, that's great. Who's Sean?
Yeah, I had no idea because I just got my episode.
Yeah.
I mean, all I knew about Mindy was literally like, I mean, it is very self-explanatory in the episode, but I didn't know what the show was. I didn't know what the hell the medium place was. I didn't know the good, I had no clue. So it was just walking in. And then luckily they were kind enough when I came on set of like, here's what you need to know just so it makes sense for what you're about to do, but we're not telling you anything beyond that. And then I was like, this show is bonkers. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So it was, yeah, it was a very interesting acting experience, as I'm sure it was for you too. It was really bizarre to walk in and be like, I've been on secretive sets before, but usually they're honestly a little bit more open, but you have to be as secretive as you need to be about this show, because that's the joy of it. It's the twists and the turns, right?
Right. I don't think I would, if it weren't crucial, I would have preferred not to have known for as long
as
possible.
Right, right, right. Because the joy of watching it is, delight.
Right. I didn't tell my wife about it. I didn't tell Beth about it, the twist in 113, and I sat next to her watching
fun.
Her watch it, which was
how
pretty
fun.
Great.
Yeah, I didn't tell the people working on the show about the ending either. So they were working on it. They were like, working on the lava monster and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow. And they
people
just didn't...
One of my best friends I sat next to for 15 years, like after it aired, it's like, oh, wow, that was great. And so nobody knew. I was getting texts and emails. And
That
is really cool.
So who took you through it? Was it Mike? Was it the director?
It was, you know, actually the cast really took me through it when we were just sitting and waiting to shoot. They're like, I think they got permission from the producers to kind of fill me in on certain things.
Sure.
So Kristen filled me in on a lot. And the producers, Morgan and Mike. And everybody kind of piecemealed me through it. But again, in a very vague, fun way that it was like, I was like, what? Like, it was very intriguing.
I can imagine you, though, getting those words and going like, oh, I'm going to destroy this script.
When I read the script, I was like, oh, I'm going to destroy this character. Like, she's very much in the pocket for me anyway, of just, you know, a bit disgruntled, a bit down on her luck, but also just attitude for days. So it was very much in my pocket anyway. But yeah, as soon as I knew, like, and I was really intrigued of, like, where this character could go, you know, like, what could potentially happen with her because she is so outside of these worlds. So that's kind of fun for me to think about just because the show is so wild, like, what could end up happening with her.
Was it a 1 week engagement at the time? Were you told that it may recur?
Yes, I was told that it may recur, that it most likely would recur, or they would most likely bring me back. And then obviously was delighted when that did happen. And hopefully will continue to happen. We shall see.
I mean, let's talk directly about season 3
right now. No, please don't do that. And plus, you know, I think we both have in our writers now that we have to work on the same shows.
It's true. Yes.
We end up doing a lot. Yeah. Jackson and I end up on a lot of the same shows.
It's very true.
It's very funny.
Is this a complaint on your part? This is not the time to bring
we'll
it
up. We'll see how this podcast goes.
I'm trying to host
we'll
a podcast. David Niednagel, it's been talked about on this program several times already that you do something called a pre-visualization. Kind of a mock-up for some of these gags that you do, right?
I do. I mean, if we want to get technical, there's pre-vis is like when you animate something. And so if it's like a big scene, like the pilot with all the ladybug, we'll animate it in a very rough form.
Okay.
And then I also do tests I use my kids for these tests.
Yes.
And because they're willing to work for very little.
For room and
board. And they're always available. They're never booked. And so...
So this is clearly illegal.
Child labor.
Clearly illegal.
Clearly.
We've got permits. So, but anyway, it's great because it helps in many different ways. One, it helps me, I'll read the script and see what the gag is. And so I kind of want to make sure Mike and Morgan that we're on the same page. I'm like, so it's a way for me to show them like, hey, this is what I was thinking. And then in doing it, I see kind of how we need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I have it. And then when we're on set, I can be able to show it to the actors and the crew and be like, okay, this is what we're trying to pull off, you know, because you can't waste any time or money in anything, whether you're filming or in post. And so.
Well, it's super helpful as an actor, too.
Feature films.
That's right.
It's super helpful when you are in these scenes, Bad Janet's head is going to melt into her neck or, someone's going to vomit pennies or whatever, to know what you're reacting to, because it's not happening, obviously, in the room. But you will come up to someone with your iPad or laptop or whatever and go, this is effectively what you're about to see. And it's two 6 and 8 year old girls or something?
Yeah, my oldest is 8, my youngest just turned 5. Okay. So, you know, they're
adorable.
I'm partial, but yes, they are adorable.
And it says, you know, you're saying it helps you with the show. It also helps you be the coolest dad on the planet.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, they're going to have these videos forever.
Yeah, we do look at them a lot, and they get really excited to do it. And they always ask, like, who's playing this part? And kind of whoever it is, they're like, yes. You know, it could be anybody. They're just excited to be a part of it.
One of the things that I think makes what you do very special for the show is obviously Mike and the producers and writers have talked about using the infinity of the show in every episode, having something happen that couldn't happen in a police precinct in Brooklyn or what have you. Just hypothetical. But also, like, there doesn't seem, even given the limited budget and limited time frame, to be any panic. You always seem to go, okay, I've been on sets, one I think you may have been on, Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen, where there is some panic because, you know, the director's moving too quickly or what have you, and things don't match.
Yes. I mean, again, I think there's multiple parts of that, but with a smaller budget and a smaller visual effects budget, I think everybody else kind of steps up, you know, and so Morgan is really great at leading that, and David Hyman, the UPM, and so all the departments kind of fall in line where I'll get text from Alexis Jacks in costumes of like, hey, does this outfit work? You know, and I worked really well with the DP, David Miller, as far as he moves really fast. And so we try to make it so I'm not asking for a half hour of time that, you know, I can get my thing in a minute or two to kind of get that through. And I'm also working it where I do a fair amount of the work myself on the show.
Wow.
And so, I don't mind working weekends and stuff because I can work from home and that's where my kids are there. And
how big is your team?
You're really nailing the dad thing. I gotta point that out. You're just killing it.
Oh, thank you. that's very important. You know, I think that's why I like to do those things with my kids and I've brought them out on set. It's great, like having like Ted and Kristen just stop what they're doing and come over and like, hey, I know you guys.
They're fans. Aww.
I mean, this is such a great show to work on. I mean, it's definitely, it feels like family.
It's special,
know?
Right?
And I love this job. It's like the best job I've ever had.
How many people are on your team when you say do some of it yourself?
We've kind of done it differently across the seasons, and we changed facilities after the first season. But when I was doing the first season, probably had like 10 to 12 people.
Wow.
You know, so it's not that big of a team. And then kind of for specialty needs.
It's not that big of a team? That seems like a decent-sized team.
We should watch a visual effects movie and say it for the credits.
Oh, that's true.
There's like 1,000 names.
Wow.
You know, and so especially when you're doing, you kind of always have about 100 shots that you're working on at a time. So yeah, and then we would kind of get people that would be specialized if we don't need it all the time. Like, hey, we need somebody to make a, you know, chimney break, but you don't need them the whole time. So you'll kind of ebb and flow with special tasks on that.
Interesting.
Can I ask him about
that? I mean, I'm so apparently your podcast.
I feel like I'm hosting this podcast now. I worked on a movie called Downsizing, Payne's movie, and there were things that he was doing on those sets, like special effects wise, that they had never really done before. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, like with it being television, are you getting challenged in that way? Do you think there's some things that, like, it just by the nature of it being the medium of television, that it's, oh my gosh, we're doing it on such a smaller scale, but it's things we may have done in Transformers or... Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest challenge is getting things done on time and in budget. And we want it to feel big, you know?
Yes.
And I think, and it's, again, being able to shoot it quickly and then be able to do it in the time that we have. So you have to be very judicious in how you plan these things out. And I'm trying to think of any specific examples, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely a challenge. And I think the challenge is less so the technical work of it, but getting it done on time.
In
budget, you know, without wanting to, you know, quit and become a farmer.
You know, so.
A Scandinavian
or
economics expert.
I don't think I can fall back on my economics now. It's been too long.
When your time on this planet comes to an end, where are you going?
Oh, God. Oh, so much pressure. I don't know. See, I could be biased because I play Mindy St. Clair, but the Medium Place isn't all that bad to me. Like, Medium Place feels like Earth in a way. Like, isn't everything the Medium Place? Like, in a way. So I don't know. I feel very comfortable in that place. It alleviates expectations of the Good Place, and it alleviates fears of the Bad Place. So it's kind of... Maybe it's a bit of a cowardly answer, but I would be happy in the Medium Place, I think. But I, of course, hope to go to the Good Place. I think I've done a pretty decent job.
It seems like you're framing it as a question, which doesn't feel super...
Am I going to the Good Place?
No.
What do you think, Jackson?
I think that full episodes of The Good Place are available on NBC.com and the NBC app. But right now... This is what I do.
That was a good segue.
Right?
No, that was a great segue.
And now it's not working. Right now, let's listen to a clip.
So I was a hotshot corporate lawyer in the 1980s. I only cared about making money and doing cocaine. And I was pretty crappy to my family as well. But one night, I had an epiphany, right? I needed to do something good with my life. So I drew up plans for this foundation that would help kids all over the world, would advance human rights, revolutionize agriculture, and just improve every nation and every society in every possible way.
You were pretty coked up, huh?
Oh, yeah, man. I was flying high. It was so awesome. But you're not going to believe this. I followed through. Yeah. I woke up the next morning. I went straight to the bank. I withdrew my life savings, and I was going to start that charity.
Good for you.
And then I immediately fell into subway tracks and was electrocuted by the third rail.
Ooh.
Honestly, not the type of rail I thought was going to kill me, because I love cocaine. Do you have any? I shouldn't. Do you? No. No. Yeah. I mean, I was just kidding. It was just a joke. I mean, who would want to do cocaine right now?
Mary Beth, in front of you, you will find some cocaine.
Oh, what?
This show is so unusual. I mean, you know, it's difficult to know what's real, right, in the established order of this show. I've been assured that the Medium Place is real. That's a legitimate thing.
Yeah.
That's not some, you know, and the circumstance in which Mindy winds up there. First of all, you seem like a super unlikely candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You did not live a beige lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about your character.
Sorry. Yeah. We're talking about the show.
Yeah. You lived a terrible lifestyle and had like one Hail Mary saving grace kind of moment.
That was fueled by cocaine. Like that was fueled by something horrible.
Right.
Yeah.
How much Mindy St. Clair is in Mary Beth Monroe?
Oh, gosh.
Come on.
Well, you knew me in my 20s, Jackson.
It's true.
I would say Mindy St. I relate to, in my 20s, I could relate to Mindy St. Clair more so than now.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, I mean, she was a power lawyer in the 80s, Boys Club. I think that's been a theme in my life with having brothers and being in the improv community and coming up in the improv community when it was mostly a boys club. Things are changing now. But yeah, I can relate to those. I've never done cocaine, so that's purely my acting ability, everything you're seeing.
To date.
To date. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I'm open, you know, I'm not, I don't know, but I say maybe. Uh-huh. So I've never done that, but definitely I would say, I don't think I'm as disgruntled or jaded, but mm-hmm. definitely I would say as strong at times as Mindy can be.
Kristen has talked about that with playing Eleanor. Like, there's definitely, you know, the things that you'd love to say
yes.
that Eleanor Shellstrop gets to that Kristen
yes.
Bell would never,
right.
might not even think of, but certainly would never utter. But I do feel like there's some of that in Mindy St. Clair.
Very therapeutic, right?
Right.
I mean, and,
really cathartic.
You know, coming from having played Alice on Workaholics for Comedy Central, now playing Mindy St. Clair, there's definitely a theme in the type of women I get to play mm-hmm. And that they get to be as outspoken. And it really is therapeutic and cathartic to
sure.
get to just kind of be that person for a time. And then go back to my normal life where I'm a relatively kind person.
I do love the rules on this show, though.
Yeah.
There's a visual effects moment that happens later where Janet grabs me by the throat and throws me against the wall and later kicks me, and it's very violent. And I remember saying to Mike Schur after that, like, is this the end of Sean? And he was like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, I mean, Janet just did that. And he was like, oh, Janet can't kill demons. Like, you know, duh.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's like that the Game of Thrones level of, like, understanding this world that they have.
Right.
We've talked about that a few times. It's fascinating.
You left one very important part out about that example is that somebody did their own stunts.
Oh, it's true.
And
I thought you were going to say that somebody had to paint out the harness lines.
No, that was the easy part, I think, doing the stunts. That was actually quite interesting because there was two parts to that
That's
scene.
Good.
Two parts. I did the first part.
Amazing.
And then he was going to, he watched the second part, wondering if he's like, you know what, I'll see the stunt guy do it. And literally a half a second after the guy did the stunt, Mark's like, nope, I'm good.
Moving on. Yeah.
Amazing.
It was so violent.
That's so cool, though, that you did that. That's awesome and brave.
Oh, I mean, I'm a gifted natural athlete.
Yes, you are.
And like doing that sort of thing. But the second one was like, I think my stunt double got hurt. Like,
oh, wow.
You know, like,
oh, geez.
It looked violent.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was fine because these guys are bulletproof, but it looked scurry.
Wow, wow. Yeah. I'm glad you opted out of that one.
What? So in this one, I zip myself into a cocoon, which, by the way, is subterfuge. That's a lie within the show. Like, Sean can 100% handle emotional talk. That was just some other level of torture.
It's so funny because when I rewatched the episode again just to refresh for this podcast, and I was like, oh, Sean's really taken a turn. Like,
right.
He is not afraid of emotions at all anymore. Like, he's actually kind of an evil dude.
Right.
Like,
it was later explained, I think, in the episode, maybe after this one, Mike talks about it, that the listeners can hear, and that it's like just one other level of torture.
Yeah.
Like, having to have the humans make a plea for Eleanor on, you know, like through a zero affect was just one other element of torture. But I remember shooting that with you, David, and you're saying like, oh, could you keep your elbow in? We don't want to have to, like, can you zip straight up kind of thing? And I don't know if there was a mock-up for that one or not at that time.
Not with my kids, but I think we had just a rough animation of like, hey, this is the general idea of, mm-hmm. you know, how it's going to fold up so you know what to do. But yeah, I mean, first, coming up with that stuff, we kind of just go through Google first, like Google, you know, cocoon.
Yeah.
And you kind of look for different images. And we had a couple of different ideas. We were like looking at have it maybe be more of like an armadillo kind
sure.
of thing. And and then we did, you know, again, looking at images like, hey, this looks like a cool green, you know, cocoon.
Yeah,
and
what was that one inspired by? Because that's not an armadillo.
No,
like,
no.
Cocoon
it was written as cocoon in the script. But it's like, all right, but it's this, and you know, you can't penetrate it, and just kind of like, what's going on? And then we kind of wanted to be able to see through it, because I think some of the cool parts about it is still seeing
the
outline of Sean inside, and then kind of think of like, how is he going to get into this cocoon? And I think just in general, a lot of people want to do something on set that mm-hmm. always helps the actor, and we always try to do as much as we can. And so they kept on talking about getting like an actual like sleeping bag
that
you would have to like put around you. And I'm like, that's not a good idea for me, because if that doesn't look good, I'm stuck with a giant sleeping bag that I've got to somehow work around.
Yeah.
And so, and just kind of how it comes around, it starts in the back, and we knew we'd be on the other side of camera so we could kind of hide it opposed from coming out of nowhere. And just kind of those little things you kind of think through, and then you can kind of, you can figure out later. You have to have an idea when you go to shoot it, and I think it hopefully helps you. And again, keeping your elbows in of, if they were out and just kind of going through the edge, it just makes life a lot more difficult. But Again,
but you're
can,
working with a professional like Jackson.
Oh, please.
It's amazing. Good at keeping his elbows in.
I'm known for my elbow work.
Elbow work.
I love the details that this show sneaks into things, deep jokes. At the beginning, when we see Eleanor in the supermarket, there are lots of references that tucked into things. I looked through it, stopping frame by frame. Yeah. The tequila that's on the shelf is called Bazarero tequila. That means dump tequila. The Lonely Gale margarita mix has a slogan that says, you don't need them anyway. It also, the mix is 55% alcohol by volume. Typically, mixes are non-alcoholic. She buys buzzer beater, lightly expired cocktail shrimp. And we see Tahani on the cover of International Sophisticate magazine. Also, there are infinite details in things like the point totals. When I throw up a screen, you must be asked to change those from time to time.
We do. And actually, in this episode, when she gets the magazine, there's the ad on the back for Glide, which is from Dennis Feinstein or from Parks and Recreation.
Right.
But that was, like, we actually did that in post. It was a visual effect to swap that out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the ad for Glide is not, Glide Eau de Toilette is not actually there?
That's not actually there. And so there's a lot of, it's kind of like, we get a lot of those little things, like even kind of, again, in this episode, when you come down off the, you know, 15 items or less, the 15 items or less sign didn't read, right? And so Mike's like, hey, can you fix that? Yeah. And so we get a fair amount of that stuff as, you know, that you're able to kind of change things in post. But we definitely do a lot of little Easter eggs for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some that there's probably like five of us know about. And
they've never really been discovered.
I don't think people would necessarily know to look for them. Some of them are at the expense of a certain executive producer. And so,
wow.
One of my favorite things about being on the show is being in production meetings and seeing, you know, Mike, Sharon, and Morgan. They're like a big brother and little brother. And Morgan is one of the funniest people I know. Mm-hmm. And he is so quick and so funny. And so when Mike has a chance to kind of, you know, elbow Morgan a little bit, there's little things that it was after it aired and Mike's like, hey, Morgan, check this out.
Really?
So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. But
is there anything that we're missing that you can talk about?
There's some stuff I've seen people kind of pick up on in Michael's kind of home screen where he gets the text from Sean. Mm-hmm. And I think in the phone call in season two, there's a little folder on his desktop that says song lyrics. And in season one, episode five, when he's talking to Hani, he was like, hey, I don't want you to look at my computer because I have some song lyrics on there that, you know, I don't want anybody to see. So we kind of said that was a real thing. And just kind of...
Of Morgan's?
Like, no.
Does Morgan have song lyrics on his computer?
I would very highly... I would be shocked if Morgan had song lyrics. There's just no way. That'd be the funniest thing ever.
Does Morgan want to be a singer? This is amazing.
So, yeah. And then, you know, we got more into it in season two. Every time, like, the random object generator was a really fun one. Where in, I think it's episode 207, Michael and Janet, where he spins the thing that Janet has to conjure up a random object. And like on set, we just like, hey, it's going to be like a, you know, slot machine. So Ted kind of does his thing. And then when we were doing it, Mike's like, oh yeah, I got to write that. So like that night, I'd get an email from him and he's got the most bizarre, random assortment of just different things. And we went through like, frame by frame, making sure that we could read each one. And I love doing that stuff. It's fun. We do it all the time.
Fun.
In this episode, Mindy Sinclair offers her opinion to Eleanor, saying, what does it matter? Like, just stay here. Like, the result is the same.
Yeah.
On a personal level, has being a part of this show changed the way that you look at how you live your life?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. What I love about the show is how, you know, it is playing with those ideas of heaven and hell in a much, I think, modern, more relatable way. And I think ultimately in my journey of, not to get too into all of this, but I was raised very Lutheran. Uh-huh. And so I was raised with a really strong dichotomy of good, evil, black, white kind of heaven and hell.
Sure.
And them being kind of these esoteric, you know, places that we can only imagine about. And so I think the show does a great job for someone like me, and I think which is why it's such a popular show everywhere, Middle America too, of like re-explaining, redefining what that can mean in a way that makes it, I think, a bit happier of a lifestyle here, that it's attainable wherever you are. So I think it's kind of reinforce that idea for me. And I just love that there's a show doing that on television for people in a very religious country. We don't have to get political, but you know what I mean? Like, where there is a lot of religion, I think it's exploring it in a cool new way that I think our country needs. Wow, I really need to be a publicity person for the show. Ah, that was really good.
I think it was good.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. But I mean it. I really do mean it.
David Neidnagel, what's good?
I would have to say my kids actually have really bad allergies.
Oh.
And which is not good, but there's a Southern California Food Allergy Institute. It's, I mean, I've had both my kids in the ER, EpiPen, ambulance,
wow,
kind of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
And it's a nonprofit associated with Miller's Children's Hospital,
wow,
down in Long Beach and USC and Cal State Long Beach. And started out, my kids were allergic to nuts and dairy and eggs, and now they have to eat like 30 peanuts a day. You
wow.
know, so they've gone, and we, like, our lives have radically changed because that week we couldn't go out and just kind of live
sure.
in our fear of, like, they would have reactions. We had no idea what was going on.
They would
on.
Have anaphylaxis.
They've had,
wow.
you know, and so a lot of times it also results in hives as well. But
yeah.
they did have stuff where they ended up in the ER. And Dr. Rendawa, the doctor down there, it's, I mean, they've been into, like, 2 or 3 years. And, again, it's just, it's... 180
wow.
radical difference. And so
say the name of it again.
The Southern California Food Allergy Institute.
Very cool.
Amazing.
So yeah. So that's
I'm so sorry that your kids have to deal with that. That's really
but
scary.
But it definitely it was. I mean, when it first
but
happened,
now,
but now it's like almost like a thing of the past. So it's that's why it's just incredible.
Amazing.
You know? So yeah.
Mary Beth Monroe, what's good?
There are these ice cream sandwiches at Trader Joe's that are delicious. No, no. They are
That's
really delicious.
That's completely legitimate.
It's very legitimate. And I've been enjoying this a lot lately. No, I'm going to echo. I actually have a nephew who has autism.
Oh.
And he was very non-communicative for a long stretch of the early years of his life. And there is a school in Michigan that has grown and grown called Healing Haven that is specifically designed for autism. Children and has helped him leaps and bounds to the point where he has some language now and life skills. And I think I just wanted to give them a shout out. And what they do is so good because, especially in Michigan, I think in bigger cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, there's more resources for autistic children, more schools to go to. And this particular school was on the kind of was the first of its kind, help me, what am I trying to say, was on the forefront
uh-huh.
In Michigan of kind of creating curriculum for these kids to kind of give them life skills and things like that. And I've just seen such a difference in his life that I just really wanted to give them a shout out because that is good to me. What they're doing is so good, much mm-hmm. like I think what you experienced with your kids. It's
Healing Haven?
Healing Haven, yes, in Michigan. I believe they're in Berkeley, if I'm correct about the city, yes.
Mary Beth and David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Jackson.
This has been The Good Place, the podcast. I'm Mark Evan Jackson. Go do something good.
There. The podcast is over. I think what I'm feeling is sadness.
Oh, don't worry, Janet. This podcast is the most perfectly engineered invention since the paperclip.
Fun fact, the man who invented the paperclip is in The Bad Place for tax evasion.
It's available on Apple Podcasts and all major podcasting platforms or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stop saying podcasts.
Hosted by Mark Evan Jackson.
Produced by Grant Rutter.
Written by Lizzie Pace.
Music composed by David Schwartz. Yay.